Desalination has an almost alchemical quality. The process offers the alluring possibility of a nearly unlimited supply of water for drinking and agriculture from an otherwise unusable source. But there's a catch. Current desalination technology uses a lot of energy. Most plants are powered by fossil fuel, generating a great deal of carbon pollution in the process. A test project on Hawaii Island aims to change that equation. The state's Natural Energy Laboratory on Hawaii Island recently received a Department of Energy grant to develop a solar-powered desalination plant. To learn more about the project, The Conversation's Ryan Finity spoke with Greg Barber, Executive Director of the Natural Energy Laboratory of Hawaii Authority.
The intention of the Department of Energy is to find new technologies that can bring down the cost of desalinated water and also find technologies that can be developed for use off the grid where the need for electrical power for desalination is not available. And the technology forward osmosis uses much less power because it needs to have high temperature water to make the membrane work. And in typical reverse osmosis, the company that's desalinating will pump the pressure up or pressurize the water to a very high pressure and then force it through the membrane to desalinate the water to take out the impurities and to take out the salt. This technology, when you have high temperature water and the membrane that they're using, the actual water is pulled through the membrane and you don't need that high temperature. So the idea is that you can bring down the cost of desalination dramatically, as well as use it in areas where there's no grid connection. There's a lot of areas around the world where water is needed for agricultural purposes in remote locations, but there's no grid connection. So this technology really would be beneficial for agricultural as well as producing drinking water.
To get a better understanding of the science behind desalination, I called Wendell Ela. He's a desalination specialist at Murdoch University in Perth, Australia.
There's two ways you do desalination. You either do it by phase change or you do it by physical separation. So phase change is like boiling water. So you'd be familiar with just taking a kettle of water, put it on the stove, boil it. Steam comes off. The steam doesn't have any salt in it. So if your kettle of water had salt in it initially with the water, only the steam would come off with no salt, then you can just grab that steam, condense it, and you got pure water. That's distillation, but it's gone through a phase change. That's one way to desalinate water. The other way to desalinate water is by separating it through a non-phase change. That's reverse osmosis, things like that, where the water never changes phase, never goes from liquid to gas or gas to solid or that sort of thing. It always stays liquid.
And non-phase change is how most desalination plants around the world operate, correct?
Yes. Most is probably an overstatement. About probably 40% of the plants now are still phase change, but they're almost all in Middle Eastern countries where energy is very cheap because it costs an extra energy to do a phase change. So if you have oil is essentially free, then actually phase change has some advantages because you can go to higher concentrations of salts. Less prone to fouling because otherwise you have to have a membrane and that can foul up and lose its permeability. So there are advantages with phase change, but you pay an energy price. And so unless energy's cheap, everybody goes with non-phase change, meaning membrane type processes.
And what is it about a non-phase change that makes it more energy efficient?
It's that the phase change for water is a very energy intensive change. It takes about 15 times more energy to change the phase of water from liquid to gas than it does just to raise the water 1 degree C. Whereas if you keep it in the same phase, now you're just really employing pressure to push it through. The pressure takes energy, but it doesn't take, it probably takes on the order of 10 to 20 times less energy to push it through a membrane than to change its phase.
The project here in Hawaii is trying to purify water, desalinate water, using a solar-powered mm-hmm. system. Are the energy requirements for most of the desalination plants we see around the world too great for current renewable sources?
No, not actually. And that's an area that there is a lot of active research, and I'm sure that's what's motivated the DOE initiative, is to try to get more renewables incorporated. The biggest trick with renewables is not that they're you can't generate the amount of energy. It's number one, that it usually takes a much bigger footprint to get the energy. So to get a megawatt of energy from solar, you're talking about a few acres of solar panels. To get a megawatt from oil or from something like that, we're talking about 100 gallons. So, you know, much smaller volumes and equipment's needed. But the sun is free, oil's not, you got greenhouse effects, things, so there's a lot of trade-offs there. But in terms of just density of energy, renewables are tough that way. The other thing that hurts renewables is their intermittency. Renewables like the sun, it comes up every day, goes down, so you've got at a maximum, you know, half a day, 12 hours on average of sun. The other time you got dark. So if you want to run a water treatment process, they like to run best at just steady. So they're running 24/7, same rate all the time, producing water. So you have to have a system, a water treatment system, that you adapt to being either intermittently on and off to suit the renewables, or speed up and slow down, depending on the intensity of the renewables, i.e. wind or direct solar as a function of time of day. Or you have to have a energy storage device of some way. So you generate the energy by renewables when it's there, you store it, and then you can run your water treatment at a steady rate 24/7. The energy storage is very expensive right now. It's more expensive by far than the energy generator itself from a renewables perspective. And so that's kind of the technological challenge, is to adapt water treatment, which likes to be kind of a steady state running all the time, is when it's most efficient, to an energy source that doesn't produce all the time, that's up and down.
And how about environmental impacts, Wendell? Is there a consequence of pulling that much seawater out of the ocean, and then all that salt has to go somewhere? What about the byproducts of this process?
There's a finite amount of water in the world. There's a finite amount of salt, essentially. And you're really not changing that much. What you're doing is making your own hydrologic cycle, smaller hydrologic cycle. You're not actually taking particularly more water out of the ocean than you would otherwise by taking it from, say, surface water, groundwater, so on and so forth. You're just short-circuiting it, because eventually all the salt gets cycled in and out of the ocean via usually by mineralogic processes, geologically slow processes. The water gets cycled on the hydrologic cycle that we all know about, you know, rain, rivers, back to the ocean, back up again in rain, that type of thing. So the amount of what we're doing is we're making a shorter cycle. So we're pulling the water out, putting the salt right back in. But the water also ends up back in the ocean. It's not like it's lost from the hydrologic cycle. So you're depleting the ocean over time of water. You're just having two much faster processes, both of getting the fresh water as well as cycling the salt, where the salt normally takes billions of years to cycle. So it's more a time issue than there is any inherent environmental difference. The big inherent environmental difference is on the energy side. And that is this thing of renewables versus non-renewables.
That was Wendell Ela, professor of water treatment and desalination at Murdoch University in Perth, Australia, speaking with conversation producer Ryan Finity. Earlier, we heard from executive director of the National Energy Laboratory of Hawaii's executive director, Greg Garber. For a link to more information about the solar desalination project on Hawaii Island, you can visit hawaiipublicradio.org.